is Alaskan Legislative Review, a program of analysis and discussion featuring the faculty and staff of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our guest tonight is Dr. Pat O'Rourke, Chancellor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and our subject is post-secondary education in Alaska. Pat, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Scott.
Let's start out. How long have you been in Alaska, and how long have you worked for the university?
I've been in Alaska since 1964, so I'm going on to my 19th year here very shortly. I've been with the University of Alaska system since about 1970. Different capacities here and there.
Where did you start out?
I actually started out on this campus in 1970. Then went to Bethel and back to Anchorage and then ultimately back to Fairbanks again.
So you've been around while the system has really seen a lot of growth.
And change.
And change. A lot of new buildings, tremendous enrollments, all sorts of things.
That's correct.
Let's go back in history a little bit and talk about the impact of oil revenues. When the University of Alaska first got in trouble in the mid-70s with its budget, mm-hmm. was that because there was too much money or there wasn't enough?
Probably neither of those exactly. I think it was maybe that we had been evolving and growing from a single campus to a university system and had not set up the appropriate managerial mechanisms to be able to develop it. I think the university system, who probably when Bob Hyatt took over in 1973, had relatively antiquated technology to be able to manage its affairs. As they attempted to move to some new technology, it's questionable as to how adequately it was brought along.
How large is the university system now in terms of number of students who are enrolled?
Roughly, I think it's in the neighborhood of 30 to 32,000 students across the state, some place or another, taking at least one course or more. That's not a full-time student figure, that's a headcount figure.
And we've seen the development of three major campuses, one at Fairbanks, one at Anchorage, one at Juneau, and you were also chancellor of the community college system before you came back to UAF. How large is the community college system now?
They probably comprise about two-thirds of the entire enrollment of the University of Alaska system, so they'd probably be somewhat over 20,000 students in that portion of it. University of Alaska Fairbanks would be the largest of the university institutions. Generally, we run between 5,500 and 6,000 a year. University of Alaska Anchorage, probably in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 3,500, and the University of Alaska Juneau, probably 1,500 to 1,800 or so would be their count on a regular basis.
All right. Given that the university is growing so fast, and we're seeing a information explosion in mm-hmm. all over the world and new technologies, new information, is the University of Alaska on track with providing the kind of higher education that that we're going to need in the future to manage a global economy, a global village in terms of communications? Alaska is becoming less and less important in terms of its geographic distance from elsewhere mm-hmm. and becoming more and more important in terms of its economic and trade potential.
Whenever we talk about the university, it's probably difficult to talk about is the university on track because it has so many entities and pieces to it. I maybe need to back up on that and sort of begin to approach it a little bit more gradually. In many ways, I think the University of Alaska system is overextended to be able to adequately meet the challenges of the balance of this century, I think. As we take a look at state revenues, and although we have a governor who is desirous of diversified economy, the reality is that we're still 88% oil dependent in this state. It appears that we're going to remain that way for a period of time. There are going to be some declining revenues. I describe the decade of the 70s probably as an attempt by the University of Alaska system to meet a mission of access. During that period of time, we saw expansion out to many other areas of the state. the focus began to move from just Fairbanks, where the university had been historically located. Of course, it grew up quite rapidly in Anchorage with two institutions there, many small rural units throughout the state, and so I would describe that decade as a period of improved access to a very large extent. To some extent, into rural Alaska, you might say that the decentralization of state-operated schools, the Molly Hooch decision, could have also been a spur, I think, to do the same thing with post-secondary and higher education to an extent. I think there are certain problems that we're going to have to face over the next decade. One of them is the fact that as you attempt to build depth of programs at a number of campuses, and I don't only refer to the university campuses, I think some community college campuses have to do the same thing. There is not going to be the resources there to continue the same degree of access that we currently have and the depth of program. I want to talk about high tech in the next decade or so. That has a couple of implications. High tech will mean rapid changes in the type of technology that you are using for instruction. Rapid tech will mean heavy equipment investments and, unfortunately, the lifespan, if you want to keep on the so-called cutting edge, will be relatively short for that type of equipment. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult for the university system to keep up with those movements. And I think a question that we're going to have to raise on a policy level shortly and deal with is, one, is what we are currently doing in the university system really what we need to be doing over the next decade or two? Are community colleges in rural Alaska going to meet the needs and expectations of the people in rural Alaska? There's a bit of a problem there to some extent. Community colleges, by definition, are two-year institutions. Yet most of the employment in rural Alaska will be professional in nature. Education, health professions, management of the corporations, and the rest. Community colleges will not be able to fully meet the needs and expectations in that area.
All right. When we think about the university system as a part of state government, the University of Alaska is a land-grant institution, which means it has certain basic thrust to its mission, going back to the original land-grant. Could you elaborate on those a little bit? Explain how the university is addressing its land-grant mission?
Sure. Typically, within the land-grant mission, you have teaching, research, and service. And in that research service component, you frequently think of the extension type of model. And essentially, what would happen would be through various agents in contact with the people, certain problems would be identified, translated back to research faculty who engage in the solution to those problems, and then communicated back out in the form of problem resolution through specialists and extension educators in the field. Traditionally, of course, in the United States, that had been primarily in agriculture and somewhat in mining-related areas. I think the University of Alaska system expanded that notion to not necessarily negate agriculture and mining, but to include those and embrace broader continuing education functions, to embrace that same type of extension in fisheries and other areas. I don't think we've done it in terms of problematic issues in management of small rural corporations, the infrastructure necessary to deal with a natural resource, what's necessary to get to the resource, manage the resource, extract it if that's what you choose to do, what types of infrastructures are necessary to do it. I think we've been a little too compartmentalized and isolated. But I think within that general scope of mission, it would be appropriate to say that the University of Alaska system, through its expansion over the decade of the 70s, was part of building that broad extension base at the more distant ends. Of course, the research elements had really evolved during the late 50s and 60s, and I think were relatively well in place, although there are many gaps and holes still. And then, of course, the teaching component has always been fairly predominant. For instance, our conferences and institutes program, which also could be considered part of that public service portion, generally serve about 10,000 people in one way or another over the course of the year. Now multiply similar types of activity by the other campuses, and I would say that probably the University of Alaska system touches in the neighborhood of 150,000 Alaskans over the course of any single year. So I think it's done pretty well in that. I think maybe we need to focus a little bit more and become more integrated in our approach to the treatment of certain problems and topics.
During the course of the last academic year, you were in the press quite a bit when you made a proposal called the University of Alaska in the 1990s. And one of the things that the press latched onto was a suggestion that it might be necessary to limit enrollments, which was something that, at least not in anyone's memory, they could recall ever having been suggested for the University of Alaska. Do you think it's going to be necessary to limit enrollment?
I suppose I need to say that I'm not sure that I put that into the planning document because of necessary so much as maybe I viewed it desirable. So I'll talk about both to some extent. Given the current economic picture, I do think it's going to be necessary to limit enrollments at some time in the future, at least in the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Anchorage. I think there is probably room for further absorption at the University of Alaska Juneau and many of the community colleges throughout the state. Anchorage Community College might have some problems in enrollments, and it could be particularly devastating for them, being an open entry institution, to have to accommodate that. So I think facilities will not be able to keep up, and what the university centers are going to face will be a question of, do we wish to try to offer quality instruction for a limited group of students, or do we offer mediocre instruction for all? I would not like to see us choose the latter, as difficult as the former might seem to be. But let's talk about desirable for a moment. Maybe it's a function of being the largest state in the union, but we do have a mentality in this state that says bigger is better in many ways. And I'm not quite sure that I think it is. I guess for the University of Alaska Fairbanks, it's reasonable to assume that the institutions in Anchorage, just given the growth patterns, will rapidly outdistance us in size. So what should and ought the University of Alaska Fairbanks become? In my mind, because it is the historic institution in the system, it's the institution that carries the primary land grant function, it's the seat of organized research and a whole assortment of things. I guess I think this institution should become the high quality institution in the state. I think its quality has been continuing to grow and emerge over the course of years, and that it's something we might wish to concentrate on more and more. Well, how do you get to quality? You need to build some depth of program. You need to make sure that you have appropriate sub-disciplines covered adequately. If you get 10% new resources per year and your enrollment continues to run at 15% per year, that means ultimately the majority of your new resources, if not all of them, are going into just meeting those new students coming to your doorstep. So how do you build the depth of program that you wish to do? I guess I think that we have to regulate that to some extent. And so we have established a goal of plateauing at 5,000 FTE students. That'd be approximately 8,600 in terms of headcount for this institution by our calculations. We think at that time we'll be able to try to hold there by very gradually narrowing our entrance requirements, beginning to restrict those slightly. I think that'll occur at such a gradual pace that people won't even realize that it's there. It'll allow us to bring our existing facilities up to par to meet that type of enrollment element. It will then allow us during the, and I would predict we'd be at this figure in about the fall of 1987, it would allow us then to plan much more discreetly and adequately over the next period of time. So as we bring our existing staff and facilities up to par, at the same time we're saying by 1991 we're going to open the spigot at the front end again, and by 1995, say, for example, we're going to want to be at 6,000 FTE. But let's get the facilities online before we have the students here, and so that we're not constantly frustrating ourselves. Very difficult to continue to plan in an open-ended thing that never seems to have any closure to it.
So if we see Anchorage and Fairbanks planning for plateaus, will we see the community colleges take some of the, whatever percentage of the students might get turned away, are they going to be able to find some kind of higher education through the community college system?
Yes and no. It depends on where you are. If you happen to be in Shishmaref, it might be a little difficult for you to be able to do so. If you happen to be in Anchorage or Fairbanks with Tanau Valley Community College, yes, you certainly probably would be able to. I think we're going to find that students who might be considered marginal for the university would be advised to a community college. And I think there will be opportunities available to them. But if the growth pattern, for instance, system-wide, our projections indicate about a 50% increase, 50 or 60% increase by 1990 throughout the entire University of Alaska system. A certain portion of that will be absorbed within existing programs without the need for new resources necessarily. But if that projected trend line is true, and the projected trend line for economic resources is also true, and understand they're working.
State revenues are going down, and but enrollments will be going up.
It is quite possible that we are going to find that there will be some students who will not be able to be served in University of Alaska institutions. That
all
is,
right.
You know, I don't want to say that everyone is going to be able to be served necessarily. We hope that they will, but I think it's questionable.
The Alaska Constitution set up the University of Alaska as a separate unit of state government with its own board of regents. It was recognized and addressed specifically by that document. And over the years since statehood, the University of Alaska has always seemed to be a hot political issue with the legislature. It seems that this year is no different. Can you, without getting yourself in too much hot water, can you talk a little bit about the politics of the University of Alaska and the legislature? Why we're always such a, seems like we're always such a difficult or controversial item. The Department of Military Affairs, for example, comes and goes without a whisper.
Right.
But we're always in the spotlight.
Well, there are probably a couple of reasons why that occurs. First of all, I'm not sure that we always are. We take our turn periodically for public flagellation by the legislature, as do certain other popular state agencies, health and social services to some extent. K-12 education periodically takes it, certainly justice, criminal system takes it at various periods of time. So I think there is a rotation periodically. If one were a cynic, one would say that the legislature has to do that with at least one state agency each year to try to convince and bilk the public into thinking that they're really doing something in terms of state government. If one were perhaps more optimistic, one would say that the legislature also has to do that periodically to various institutions to assure that there is a check and balance system, as I think the Constitution meant, between the multiple branches of government. So I think part of it just falls into that framework. We have been in the headlines a lot this year. I think the last few years it's been relatively low key. Around 1979, we were, of course, very prevalent in the headlines and so on back through history. Part of the reason, I think, is because the university is indeed that quasi-fourth branch of government in many ways, and so therefore it doesn't fall under the State Budgetary Act, under state government in the same way as do the other state agencies, and so therefore it stands out in a very prevalent fashion when it goes before the university. There is also, I think, some feeling by popularly elected representatives that periodically university representatives might need to really understand the populace as they do. And so I think part of that goes into it. So I'd say part of it's just the cyclical rotation for, depending again on your point of view, if it's a positive one, for the check and balance system to work, if it's a negative one, for the public flagellation. Part of it's because indeed it is the fourth branch, quasi branch of government, and falls outside the state in many other of the traditional practices. So it has more public visibility to that extent.
I did a little research and I found out that roughly half of the Alaska legislature at this time has either attended or graduated from the University of Alaska system. So we must be, they must have some kind of feeling for it. I'm hoping, hopefully it was a positive experience. They're not getting back at us for GPAs or something like that. I wanted to go back and talk about enrollments in this sense. Is the University of Alaska looking to educate people toward those careers and professions that seem to have the best chance of being important and having opportunities in the future? And or does it want to do that but still emphasize the traditional functions of a university where we may have a lot of PhDs in art history who are not necessarily going to be employable, but who we nonetheless recognize a commitment to?
Again, I think you would have to talk about one of the units of the University of Alaska system to address that, rather than the system as a whole, because I think the if you were to read the broad mission for the University of Alaska system, you'll probably see a variety of things embraced, and then we tried to specialize that in terms of some specialized missions to the various entities within the system. University of Alaska Fairbanks is, of course, the only PhD-granting institution in the state at the present time, and appears to be that that will be so, and certainly through the next decade for the most part. I think there's a balance. I think we do indeed wish to and seek to educate people toward the professions that are going to result in providing them with a livelihood throughout their life. And as a matter of fact, if you track our enrollment history for the past 5 years, you'll probably find it heaviest in the engineering professions, the education profession, and the school of management. School of management's doubled in size in the last 5 years. So that's where the enrollment seems to be coming in. However, if you really want to say that you have a university education, I think that we have a responsibility to go beyond just that professional training, and we need to begin to assure or continue to assure that our students have a broad-based background in the arts and sciences, because they are going to be a citizen of the state, citizen of the nation, and hopefully a citizen of the world, and they'd really better understand some of the broader elements and interrelationship that one gets through the arts, the sciences, and the rest. Philosophically, I believe that, you know, you can't just live in a world of professional technology. You must live with an aesthetic of life. You must live with a philosophic base to your history. So I think within a balance, yes, we do want to engage in the PhD programs, the master's programs, the bachelor's programs that would be in the arts and what the general public might think as not very important areas to concentrate on. But I think it's our long-term thread of an anchor throughout history that those disciplines provide for us, while the others are transient. They come and go depending upon market conditions.
How well are University of Alaska graduates faring in the job market within the state?
To the best of our knowledge, quite well. It will, of course, vary, I suppose, from discipline to discipline. And I must admit that we don't have in place as good of a program of follow-up of graduates as I would like to see. So there are a lot of gaps and holes. Engineering profession certainly doing quite well. accounting majors doing quite well. Frankly, arts and science graduates that I've come across all seem to have found some type of employment in different areas.
And education? Are we
education's
putting out some good teachers? Are they getting hired in the state?
Yes, they are. I think the education market is is contrary to national trends, is still a very, very viable market for someone here, particularly in the rural areas of the state. I think we're putting out better and better teachers.
What do you have in mind for capital projects, for Fairbanks in particular? And maybe you could just give us a brief idea of what's in what the university system has in mind for the future.
Okay. I think for the University of Alaska Fairbanks, maybe I can address a couple of projects that we'd like to see actually begun this summer. We will have a major addition to the library, hopefully, yet starting this summer. We will have a major addition to the engineering building, hopefully starting this summer, and hopefully we'll have a new student residence facility beginning this summer. Down the line, our highest priority for new construction would be a new teaching research facility. It would be combined that we would try to house a number of our natural sciences. We'd like to pull together from the assorted areas across campus some like groups for both teaching and research purposes, and to better interlink and philosophically join those functions. So that's been on our request list for 3 years running, and it'll probably be on for the fourth year coming up. Following that, then we would have a completion of the last two stories to the Duckering addition. And by the time we would have that addition plus the science facility, we would be able to vacate Brooks Hall and be able to do some major reconstruction in that particular area. There are some other facilities down the line, but we're a little bit short on time, so why don't I jump to the system?
Sure.
I think we're going to continue to see major developments into the Anchorage area, particularly the University of Alaska Anchorage. Just this year, with the opening of a new facility, will they even begin to have a little bit of breathing room in terms of space?
Is that a new classroom facility?
It's a new classroom administration facility. Oh. I think it's a combined facility at that campus. We have two or three community colleges without any campuses at all.
Yeah. Thanks very much for being with us, Pat.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
This has been Alaskan Legislative Review. Our guest tonight has been Dr. Pat O'Rourke, Chancellor at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, and our subject has been higher education in Alaska. Alaskan Legislative Review is a production of KUAC FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our executive producer is Carla Tanella. I'm your host, Scott Sterling.